The RAIN Podcast Business Summit 2021 from New York.
First off, thank you, Scott, for having me and to my co-panelists and everyone tuning in from home. I'm excited to be here. And frankly, I am just excited to have a conversation about podcasts with a group that extends beyond my husband and dog. No offense to them, but I think they are relieved as well. So looking forward to this. But yes, first, why? So exciting times. We are now in the second week of rolling out a rebrand or a rename, really. Some of you may not be familiar with Wyze, but we are a global technology company that is building the best way to move money around the world. So whether you're sending money to another country, spending money abroad, or making and receiving international business payments, simply put, Wyze is on a mission to make life easier and to save you money. So that last bit about making people's lives easier and saving them money, that's really been the goal since day one, ever since our company was launched in 2011. It's just that across the past decade, we've really expanded the ways in which we're helping people do those things. So now we support over 10 million people in businesses. We have the world's most international multi-currency account. We also have a business account, Wyze for Business, and we also support platform integrations that today allows more than a dozen banks to use our payment infrastructure to power their own cross-border payments. So for those that do live borderless lives, the challenges really stretch beyond just money transfers. And that's really the types of products that we've been building all along. So actually, Christo, our CEO, in a recent blog post about the rebrand or the rename, simply said that this name change is catching our name up with who we've already been building for. And that is a community of people and businesses with multi-currency lives. So now, the task at hand and a big focus of our marketing plans going forward will be to really reposition Wyze in the minds of both our current customers and new potential customers. So Wyze is no longer just helping people with their money transfer needs. Wyze can help people with all of their international banking needs. So although a lot is not actually changing for our current customers, the core experience of using Wyze remains the same. We do have our work cut out for us because we know that there are actually many more people that we could be helping in many more ways. So that's a little bit about how that process came to be.
Got it, thanks. And a couple of things on that. I think I can probably speak for a lot of people here that it'd be nice to live a borderless life again someday around along the horizon. But also, you mentioned your dog, and fair warning for everybody. I'll try to be quick on my mute trigger finger, but I've got an intellectually challenged dog who may make some noise. But back to the task at hand. So Wyze has been a podcast sponsor with NPR, of course, and other publishers. And when you're evaluating audio, what appeals to you specifically about the podcast platform?
Yeah, definitely. So we run our podcast advertising in-house at Wyze, and it's still actually one of our quickest growing channels. Goodness, so much appeals to me when it comes to podcasting. To name a few, the vast universe of diverse quality podcast content, the dialed in and valuable audience, which happens to be super well aligned with Wyze's target customer. A listening experience that for the most part has not become overly saturated with advertisements. I think everyone in this room recognizes and appreciates the authenticity and the intimacy that is still very well maintained in this medium. But beyond the obvious, I think the other two things that keep me really excited about podcasting, especially as a marketer, is one, the colossal size of the untapped opportunity that still exists to reach and engage new audiences. At Wyze, we've been incrementally growing our podcast sponsorship program for at least 2 to 3 years, and still I feel as if we are just barely scratching the surface. So it's really encouraging to work on a channel that is so effective, but also so scalable. Additionally, I think that the podcast environment has proved to be very compatible with and accommodating to Wyze's brand voice. So whether through our advertising, our customer comms, our website or app experience, we try to always keep our tone personable, conversational, relatable, perhaps even a little bit punchy and quirky if we're doing our jobs well. And that has translated really, really well into podcasting. Another huge benefit, I think, is the expertise and the knowledge that sort of come with the direct partnerships. And most everything that we do currently with our podcast advertising is handled directly with publishers or networks. So it kind of feels like we have a personal consultant with every campaign that we work on. We may be the experts when it comes to talking about our brand, but the hosts and the publishers at these shows or that host these shows are the experts when it comes to talking to their audiences. So in order for our advertising to be effective, I think that we really have to understand and respect each of the unique relationships that that audiences have with these shows and with these hosts. So being able to actually ask, you know, well, what do you recommend? Or what type of messaging works best with your audience? What should we be thinking about that we haven't already? And then actually receiving really thoughtful answers from partners, that feels like something very special, and it's certainly been really valuable to us.
That is really helpful to hear. And speaking for this publisher specifically, we are, of course, a cross-platform company with a long, wonderful history in radio. That's vocabulary, and radio is, of course, changing a lot. But we've seen some of our other podcast clients really benefit from the addition of radio and other NPR platforms. Do you look to your current podcast partners for multi-platform opportunities? And if so, given that this is a panel on attribution, do you measure those the same way as you measure podcast response?
That's a good question. So we have definitely experimented with cross-platform sponsorships in the past, and we actually have no doubt that those are impactful. Because though Wyze is still so focused on growth, we remain quite data-driven and performance-driven. And so it is actually really important for us to be able to accurately measure the impact of all of our marketing expenditures in a way that is compatible with our sustainability goals, but that also makes us feel as if we can confidently make smart and informed investment decisions. Right now, with the recent advancements in podcast attribution tracking, and I'll jump on the PodSites love train. We're big fans, and for a while now, all of our podcast advertising has been tracked with PodSites attribution tracking. Podcast advertising is really checking all of those boxes for us. And as I mentioned earlier, I think there's still so much opportunity for us to unlock in this space. Just last month, we saw something like a 40% month over month growth in new customers attributed to our podcast advertising. So our ambitions are grand. I think, you know, down the road, we do hope to be able to harness the potential of all types of audio advertising. So broadcast, streaming audio, smart speakers, everything really. But for now, our main focus is really on podcasting just because we think we have so much more work to do here.
Got it. Thank you very much. Maria, turning to you, Lee touched on it when he introduced us that there have been obviously major changes in audio over the last year, but digital audio has continued to thrive. It's projected for continued growth in the current year in 2021. Why do you think, from an agency perspective, why do you think audio is getting all this attention now from an increasing number of brands and agencies? And do you think podcasting is used as a gateway to bring new advertisers into audio overall?
Audio has been in the spotlight with tech advances, major acquisitions, and smart speaker listenership growth. I think particularly late last spring and summer, brands took notice of how podcasts in particular is deemed pandemic-proof. Watching a channel see continued growth in both content creation and audience gave brands who are considering dipping their toe in pre-pandemic, the confidence to jump in on board. I also can't oversell the value of our attribution partners when it comes to building our clients' confidence and validating the space. Regarding podcasts as a gateway, I would say it goes both ways. We have brands who are only activating in digital audio with streaming and podcasting, and we have brands who have always prioritized terrestrial, starting to include podcasting, similarly to how 10 years ago we adjusted their mix to include streaming. we offer our clients a holistic view of the audio landscape and help guide them to plans that fit their KPIs, whatever they may be.
So you and Cassandra both talked about measurement is a critical piece for the podcast puzzle. I'm curious where upper funnel measurement fits into that. Where does brand building fit into the measurement as you really focus on the transaction and the deliverable? I think most marketers consider both to be important, but how do you create that equation, Maria?
I think it's difficult to work with that. We have brands from higher and lower funnel who are both using pod sites. I think being able to really see that measurement and really utilize pod sites benchmarks, I think helps us to determine what we should be doing in our next campaigns.
Got it. Cassandra, what about you? Are there upper funnel measurements and scores you put on that?
So I also smile because it's not easy to answer that question. I think, you know, all of those things, like trust, favorability, all of these wonderful halo effects, that is something we absolutely do think about. And in fact, it factors quite strongly into our decision making when we consider embarking upon new podcast advertising campaigns. I mean, we deal with people's money as a brand, right? Like being able to tap into an environment where a trusted voice is speaking directly to their listeners and is actually reading our messaging to those listeners, that's super valuable for us because already that halo of trust is super important to getting listeners to a place where they feel like they can trust us too and trust us with their money. So I actually don't think that any of our podcast advertising would work at all if all of those things weren't present. It just so happens at the end of the day that we drill a bit further down the funnel when it comes to measurement. So all very important, even if we are, yes, just building our attribution tracking around lower funnel metrics.
Got it.
Yeah, I would say just to add on to that halo, I think for NPR specifically, having that trust has been so important. As we've seen over the last few months, news has really been popping as a genre. And I think podcasts are providing that space where you're hearing a trusted voice. You feel confident in the news that you're getting, and I don't think you can undervalue that.
Yeah, thanks for saying so, Maria. It has been safe to say an interesting time to be in the news business. Andrew, I think this is a good segue to you. Thanks to vendors like Veritonic, many brands are getting better at measuring the effectiveness of their audio sponsorship. So can you talk a little bit about how Veritonic measures audio effectiveness?
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you, Scott, for the invite to be on the panel. So I think this conversation around trust and authenticity is really, these upper funnel metrics are really interesting. So we look at four pillars of advertising effectiveness: emotional resonance, intent, whether it's purchase intent or consideration, recall or memorability, and engagement with those ads. And collectively, those four things let us measure really the life cycle of audio marketing, whether it's in the strategy development phase through competitive intelligence or pre-market testing with creative measurement, or even brand lift and attribution a little bit further downstream. And that common currency lets us and our clients understand those elements of effectiveness at each stage. And so bringing, for instance, we're talking about trust and measuring the impact on brand, trust with a brand, I think is a really powerful opportunity, especially for brands who aren't necessarily able to follow consumers all the way down the funnel. Not everyone has the benefit of a TransferWise of actually converting all the way down the funnel. So there's ways to measure the impact of advertising a little bit further upstream with things like emotional resonance and impact on consideration and purchase intent. Also, I just want to make the point, Scott, I think it's really interesting. NPR as a multi-channel platform, not just podcasting, but also smart speakers and radio, both streaming and terrestrial, these same techniques can be used across all those channels. And so I think, you know, what we're trying to do is help brands and marketers understand that they can leverage this kind of measurement really in a multi-channel way, you know, across all of their marketing.
It's true, Andrew, and we've engaged in a few really interesting projects with you all to demonstrate how the difference in NPR audio really has resonance within our ecosystem. But when you talk about upper funnel leading to lower funnel, how do you measure those transactional measurements with the performance that you all can gauge?
Yeah, so I mean, a lot of it is based on some of the same, you know, pixel-based technology that we've been talking about for some of the downstream attribution vendors like Chartable and Podsites, using pixels to identify an exposed audience, you know, the folks that have been exposed to a podcast, and comparing that with a response from an unexposed control group. You know, just the classic exposed, unexposed methodology that, you know, frankly, podcasting wasn't able to execute a couple of years ago, but today, you know, I think it's, you know, this approach, as we've been talking about for the last few minutes, is very widely accepted. And that lets us extend that measurement and that understanding of the impact of the advertising further downstream in a way that I think a lot of, you know, a lot of brands have been looking for and are now able to achieve.
Cassandra, back to you. I wanted to get your thoughts. The title of our panel does get into custom content. So I wanted to get your thoughts on custom content at National Public Media. We do have a content studio called NPM Creative. I know that you have talked to our team about that too. We produce custom audio to fit and complement the voice and tone of NPR editorial. Their projects range from all sorts of different industries around the country to tell a really robust story. So can you talk a little bit about where you all are in the evaluation both of NPM Creative and perhaps other publishers?
Yes, absolutely. So I would say that this is something we are very much thinking about. And in fact, I would consider this the next big frontier for us on our quest to continue to grow and build our podcast sponsorship program. Absolutely. The work we're doing with your team has been incredibly helpful to help us better understand how to start wading into these waters. And it's also something that we are seeking out across all of the other publishers that we work with where possible. And I mean, I think that not only is this a really great time for us as a brand to start playing around with more custom high impact audio advertising formats, but I actually think it's kind of inevitable whether or not we were ready to do that. I mentioned before that we've been running our program now for many years, and we've actually been running consistently with many publishers for many years. So those audiences and those hosts have been reading our ad copy, and bless them, they've been super responsive still to all of our creative. But we understand as a brand and as an advertiser that will only continue working if the sort of special magical environment and the relationship that listeners have, not only with the podcast content, but with the advertiser messaging, you know, that's very unique, the engagement and the receptivity, I think, that listeners have to that in this medium is super unique, and we appreciate that as a brand. So we kind of recognize the role and the responsibility that we play to maintain that integrity of that relationship. So we need to keep putting fresh, interesting, re-energized creative in front of listeners. And I think, you know, I refuse to believe that advertisers are fated to erode all of the trust and all of the special magic that exists in the podcast space right now. Quite the opposite, actually. I think that we have an opportunity to contribute to that and even bolster it a bit. It just requires, I think, a concentrated effort certainly a lot of learning on our part, more resources, more creative thinking. And that's something that my team has been spending a lot of time thinking about. And it's something that we're quite excited about. Again, it's all just a matter of starting to test these new formats in a way that's compatible with the tracking that we use to measure performance. So absolutely, I think it's what we're going to be focused on this next quarter, and we're super excited about it.
You just hit on exactly what I was going to ask next, and we're talking about attribution. So how do you intend to measure it?
So that has been sort of central to our process of figuring out which publishers and which shows are the right ones for us at this point in the process to test this out with. A lot of the formats that we're exploring, thankfully, can be featured in, you know, the same ad slots that are more traditional host-read or standard messaging has been featured in. So we still plan to use pixel-based attribution tracking to measure that performance. And then, you know, further, I'll say, actually, like with NPR, the beauty of building extended multi-year partnerships, we've run ads on nearly every podcast that NPR puts out. And I think at this point, we've been able to establish a pretty strong baseline against which to judge, you know, the performance of anything new or future iterations on our partnerships. So in addition to, you know, using attribution tracking, I think that we have established a very clear foundation and baseline to work off with many of the publishers that we hope to test new creative with. So a little less formal, not an exact science, but I think it'll be helpful.
Awesome. Thank you. Maria, from the agency standpoint, how are you all at Horizon considering custom audio?
We have a few brands that are interested in custom content creation, whether that be custom vignettes, publisher-produced creative, or brands creating their own podcasts. But for me, the key is aligning with content, taking advantage of host relationships with the audience. And I think Cassandra said this earlier, but creating that organic experience with the listener is authentic. That's really important. What you're describing from NPR accomplishes that, staying in the NPR tone and not jarring the listener. I think making sure that we're not putting the listener in an experience that turns them off is really valuable. Measurement would be the same for me, but I will say that, you know, based on what we have been seeing with pod sites, we see higher engagement and higher conversion rates on campaigns with host reads and with publisher-produced ads that are tailored to the content.
Got it. Andrew, what are some best practices that that you can point to for Veritonic to measure maybe a custom content produced audio creative?
Well, first, I'd like to just, you know, shout out to NPR. You guys put out that podcast report just a couple of weeks ago that highlighted a whole bunch of these best practices. First, you know, I think any form of message optimization, you know, Cassandra, you just mentioned keeping the message fresh, but each time you refresh the message, you got to make sure that it's actually grabbing the audience the same way. And so things like testing, you know, even down to the specific combination of words, you know, wise is the best way to transfer your money, or I forget what was the phrase that grabbed Scott a couple of minutes ago, the borderless natives. but finding these
borderless lives. Yeah, I even wrote it down, Andrew. Yeah, borderless lives.
Borderless lives. Thank you. Finding these specific phrases, which you can do either through, you know, post measurement, you know, attribution down the funnel, but by then you've already given up, you know, potentially other, you know, some of that possible conversion, or pre-market creative testing. So again, I think message optimization, the actual content of the ads, element optimization, things like the actual voice that's being used. In some cases, when you're working with a specific host or podcast, you don't have a choice around the voice. You're selecting that. But if you are, thank you. I see Townsend just posted the NPR report in the chat. But to a certain extent, if you're working with custom content, and certainly with a lot of publishers, you can develop a specific voice, and making sure that that voice fits the attributes of your brand and the message that you're trying to get across. That's really key. And then last, but by no means least, and I think we've really, you know, talked about this quite a bit, measuring the entire life cycle. So as you're planning which podcast host to use, I mean, clearly, Maria, Cassandra, you're selecting very carefully which podcasts you want your ads to appear on, but then making sure you're putting the right message out with the right elements and making sure that it's actually driving the brand perception, favorability, purchase intent, and even conversion that you're looking for. It's all basic blocking and tackling, but I think the tools are now out there to help brands actually do all this.
Agreed. Maria, we touched on a little bit earlier whether or not podcasting was a gateway or quote unquote radio is the gateway. I'm curious, when you're looking at the range of options for your clients, do you focus on one or the other, or do you take an all-in approach of the value of audio?
It really depends on the client and their KPIs. I said earlier, we have brands and companies looking specifically for podcasts, and then there's others who are looking to integrate it into their mix with their existing budgets. There's so many nuances to the podcast space, though. So once we've established budgets there, we like to walk our brand solutions teams through the podcast plan individually. Even just within that piece of the plan, there's so many nuances and ways that we like to mix things up, whether it be exclusively looking at host reads, working through category verticals, or focusing on audience insights and really getting in there with the audience targeting. Typically, I recommend a mix of those things. So usually we really have to walk our teams through that and make sure that everybody's on the same page and understands what our goals are.
Got it. And we've talked a little bit, Maria, about measurement. Both you and Cassandra have mentioned pod sites. That's something that we're able to offer our sponsors in a way to assess their podcast ROI, and that return on ad spend is obviously super crucial. And thankfully at NPR, our campaigns are performing about 40% higher than their overall benchmarks and pod sites overall benchmarks. But when you all buy podcasts, are you looking at it demographic makeup first, or CPM efficiencies, or brand environment? You mentioned in your last answer that it just depends on the client. Is that the same answer here?
Yeah, it's a tough question because every campaign we put together is specific to that client. It's also a balancing act. I would say I start first with fit and scale. So with podcasts, making sure that the brand we're supporting resonates with the audience of the show is absolutely paramount. We view hosts almost as influencers. Their listeners support them, they trust them, and they're loyal to them. So in my opinion, it's more important to choose shows that have a tight match to the brand so we can capitalize on the intimacy of the space and really remain authentic. This fit encompasses both brand affinity and also brand safety, which is so important to our clients, specifically our biggest spenders. All of that said, as an agency partner, it's always our job to get the best inventory that aligns most closely with the target for the best price. So I can't really discount the importance of CPMs and efficiencies.
Yeah, it all matters, in other words.
It all matters.
It all matters. Well, you've mentioned authenticity and environment, and it seems to me that's where most of these discussions start. But I'll start with you with the final question, Maria, and that's a crystal ball question. What's on the horizon for the rest of this year, for you, for your clients? What do you think are priorities or new things coming?
Really excited about new tech and the increasing growth of scale in the space. While I do think host reads are where the best results come from in terms of conversions, I think that the future is going to be about layering behavioral psychographic targeting at the show level. The combination of increased scale and dynamic insertion, audience targeted host reads really don't seem as far-fetched as they did even a year ago. And we're there yet, but that's where we're going to end up. And that's pretty exciting.
Andrew, what about you? What's your crystal ball telling you?
Well, I actually want to highlight two big things that I think are going to be on the horizon. The first is, talked about this a little bit already, but just the emerging growth of a multi-channel world. Someone on the last panel, I think it was Paula, actually referenced that consumers aren't differentiating between whether they're listening to a podcast on their phone or a smart speaker. In some cases, it's the same content that they're getting over radio. So it's the multi-channel experience. And, you know, just making sure that folks are thinking holistically about that, especially from a measurement perspective. I spent 2 hours this morning talking about multi-channel measurement with different clients about ways to actually use podcasting for testing messages that they're going to use in other channels. So I think multi-channel is going to be an increasing theme that we're going to see. And the other, frankly, is just preparing for a post-cookie world. That's going to have a really big impact on the way that a lot of vendors in the marketplace are able to help our clients understand what's going on. And the really smart folks have been thinking about future-proofing for some time. And I think that's going to be a really big theme. Who knows when Apple and Google are actually going to, drop their gates. But, again, making sure that we're all prepared for that, I think, is going to be a key theme in 2021.
I couldn't agree more about the multi-channel. I think we call it platform agnostic, but it's all the same thing.
Right.
Agreed. Cassandra, over to you. Final word on a crystal ball.
Sure. This may be more my hopeful or wishful thinking than an actual prediction, but nonetheless, I hope to see an increase in the demand and a market for local and hyper-localized podcast content. I am a big fan of NPR's Consider This, actually, and since I live in New York City, I am lucky enough to be in one of the markets that gets to experience the hybrid national-local news combo. And so I love that, and I really hope that the advancements in podcast technology actually make it a lot easier to connect local newsrooms and local podcast creators with the communities that they serve on a podcast platform. So that'd be mine.
Awesome. Thank you, Cassandra, Maria, Andrew, and your companies, Veritonic, Horizon, and Wyze. Really appreciate your time. And Lee, back over to you.